Dear friends, in this ongoing study of Bhagavad Gita, we are looking at the 14th chapter, which is very important to understand how one gets bound, and therefore what are the right means to get freedom. This is a psychologically very relevant chapter for us. We saw that how our ignorance gets into these three modes of bondage that we experience. Vedanta is a critic of experience, like Kant has a critic of pure reason and critic of practical reason. Vedanta can be thought of as critic of experience. It analyzes our experience and looks at the various different patterns that come into it. So, on the basis of that, this analysis of gunas is made, and it is a very penetrating analysis. It almost just harmonizes or harmoniously explains all different aspects of our life, like our desires, our actions, the impressions that we collect from that, our moods. All this gets properly understood by this beautiful analysis of gunas. It is very sublime and profound, getting into every aspect of our personality, into the deepest recesses of our psyche, as well as all the external things that we come in contact with at every level. It is shown that how these three gunas, named as sattva, which makes up for, to put it in nutshell, because we had tried to study it for last quite a few classes, that in nutshell to put it, it is something that creates the feeling of serenity, calmness, the tendency to know, tendency to have, you know, in general, a benevolent feeling for everything. That is the sattva. Then there is the rajas, where we become agitated and active. The desires titillate us, they propel us, and we go for the desire propelled activity, which leads to suffering and very strong attachments to the world. Then there is the tamas, the desire, or not exactly the desire, let us put it like that, that is mood, that makes us rather lousy, disoriented, irritating personality, not doing anything particularly. All life is like a big mess. You don't even do activity properly. It is all conflicts that go on inside. So that is tamas, which makes a person very lazy. It has also been shown how these three different gunas, how they make their manifestation, so that we can identify them before they make their presence, so that we can prepare ourselves to deal with it. It is like we have the weather forecast, and this is kind of guna forecast, that when and how to recognize the signs of guna. Like you recognize the coming weather by certain signs, that if you feel very stuffy and humid and warm and all that, and then you feel your joints rather achy, then you can think that it is the rains are probably on their way. So similarly, it is how the gunas, they make their presence. If we know them in advance, then we can prepare ourselves to deal with it. So the situation otherwise, if it presents itself suddenly, then we are caught unawares and get drowned in it. So to prepare ourselves that what is coming up, we will then be ready for it. So that has been shown, then also was shown how they lead to different results, different types of bondages. While it has been emphasized that all three are bondages, this also has been underscored that it doesn't mean that thus all are, these three gunas are same, and so we don't have to cultivate any of these. That is not the case. While it is true that all of them are bondages, to go beyond the bondages, we have to take help of them in various ways. And so it has been advised that one has to cultivate the sattva, and with that one can overcome the bondage of rajas and tamas, and then with the help of the knowledge, one overcomes or gets rid of the sattva too, and thus one becomes free. It is very tempting to think, and many actually think and confront with questions like that, that if we are ever free anyway, then why try to cultivate a good life? Anyway, all is unreal, all is bondage, even good is bondage. Even being calm, that also is a bondage. Being good to others, do good to others, that also is bondage. Then why go for it? On the face of it, the question appears to be making sense. But if we go deep, we see the fallacy in it. That true, in that sense the bondage is not there at all. Bondage itself is out of ignorance. And therefore there is, really speaking, no bondage. The question only crops up because we feel bondage. If we don't feel bondage, then there is no need also to try for freedom. In fact, many, because having deeply just involved in this world and bound so much and got tuned to that bondage, got attached to that bondage so much that the feeling of bondage also is not there. And therefore, obviously, there is no struggle for freedom. And they are religious people, no doubt. Most of them are religious. Only to the extent that they think that there is a God, if prayed, that God will shower lot of money and lot of enjoyments on us and will kill our enemies and so forth. The idea of that God is that all these my enemies be killed. So, and thus we will be victorious in wars, and we will have lot of good yield in the crops, and we will get lot of money and lot of enjoyments, and the diseases will be kept away, and our children will grow up very good, and so forth. So for that you take the recourse to religion. But that is not really a struggle for freedom. That is not the religion in its true essence, the true essence of religion starts manifesting in us when our true, real, unchanging, infinite, all-pervading nature is felt, and the inability to manifest it also is felt. Thus one sees this bondage, and as soon as you feel the bondage, the struggle for freedom also gets strongly started. One, because we don't like to be bound, and it is there that the religion really starts making sense in one's life. Then you become religious, truly speaking. So, there you feel the bondage, then you understand, try to understand how one gets bound, and then a struggle for freedom. So, in this struggle for freedom, it is thus imperative to get the means for liberation. If we see that we are all ever free, then we don't need means for liberation. The word means of liberation makes sense only if we feel that we are bound. And this means of liberation is the cultivation of these great virtues which are symbolized by this sattva guna. So, if we are cultivating sattva guna, if the sattva is becoming more and more predominant, bringing in a more thirst for true knowledge, making us have this feeling of quiet calmness, reducing the tendencies to go after the sense enjoyments, and in general we feel more sense of compassion and benevolence towards the world, then that sattva is increasing. And as it increases, the spiritual evolution also is on its way. We get spiritually evolved, the rajas, tamas, they get more and more suppressed. So the next verse, that is the verse number 18, and that shows this idea. Urdhvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishthanti rajasah jaganya gunavrittistha adho gacchanti tamasah. Those who abide in sattva go upwards to higher spheres. The rajasika dwell in the middle spheres, and tamasika, dwelling in the functions of the lowest guna, go downwards to lower spheres. So, although all three are bondages, there is a difference. In the relative world, everything is different, and no two things are alike. If they are two things, then that means they are different somewhere, that is why they are two, otherwise they are one. And that I was talking to a person about how even two electrons are different. They have not the same, all four quantum numbers are not same, and something has to be different. Like I have same name, say Geeta Patel, and then same street address, and then same town, same zip code. So if all four are same, what do you conclude? Are they two different persons? Then that means it is the same person. So it is. If at least one thing should be different, then the same name and same street address, same apartment number, same town and same zip code, then same, that is same person. So all things, they are same as Brahman, as God, everything is same. But we are different in appearance, in relativity we are different. So in relations to this, we need to evolve. There is therefore the struggle to become better and better. And that is signified by this acquisition of more and more sattva. So it is specified here, sattva takes us on a path of evolution. The rajas more or less keeps us in the same plane that we are, and tamas makes us go down further. So therefore it is advised by this verse that therefore cultivate more and more sattva, become more and more sattvika, so that you have now the means to cut asunder the bondages. Once you cut asunder the bondages with sattva, then sattva also can be discarded, but not till then. Till then you need it. That yes, you have lot of those grass has grown too much, so you need lawnmower to get rid of all that. So after you do all that removing the grass, then afterwards you can keep the lawnmower aside, that the job is done. So similarly, we have to use this lawnmower of sattva to get rid of all these overgrown things. And then after it is done, okay, now I don't need it. This is how we have to use the sattva. It is bondage, no doubt. Like lawnmower would be a bondage if we have to always keep it tied to our person. It will be a terrible thing. So, but it is to be used for this purpose and to be kept aside. There is a very beautiful analogy in Buddha's teachings about this, that suppose a person is wanting to cross over the river, and so for crossing the river makes a raft to cross over, and then crosses the river with the help of that raft. Then while going across the river on the raft, gets so attached to the raft. Oh, this raft so nice, it is taking me across this. And so after reaches the other shore, then cannot leave the raft, but in the meantime has got so attached to that, that the fellow carries it on the head and starts going, because the attachment has been developed by that time. So he advises that you have to use all the spiritual practices like meditation and so forth, but without getting entangled into them. So this is the place of acquiring the sattvika qualities, so that we can suppress the terrible bondages that come by getting involved into rajas and tamas, and then we can let go the sattva bondage as well. So this is the next step of feeling the freedom from all gunas is described in the next verse. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drashtanupashyati gunebhyascha param vetti madbhavam sodhigacchati. When the seer beholds no active agent other than the gunas and knows that which is beyond the gunas, and he attains my being, my written in capital, that is Lord's being, attains to Lord, attains to freedom. When he or she understands that there is no active agent other than gunas. So I am free. They are not, I am not doing anything. Then all the activity is really done by these gunas. I am not doing anything. Then that being with that knowledge becomes one with the divine. This is good to understand in comparison with what, how we feel now. I feel I am giving this lecture, and so I get the result of this, and thus I get bound by the result. And when I understand that it is only the gunas that they are at work, I am just the drashta, that is just a witness. I am not affected by that. I am not doing anything. Then I come to my true divine nature. Then I become one with God. Because I actually am God. There is nothing else but God. That is a great saying, you see, in Judaism, Christianity and Islam. Common. This is a common thing you will find in their scriptures. And of course it is in Vedanta that there is only one God and nothing but God. God alone is. And that there is only one God. This Sufis as well as Kabbalists practicing this mystic discipline of Judaism, they say that in a slightly different manner. They say that there is only one period. There is only one period, God. That one gets called as God. There is nothing other than God. So God alone is. One comes to that realization, that experience, and thus you become free. Now you have no bondage. You see that you are free. You never had any bondage. So that is how one comes to freedom. That one separate from God gets destroyed, annihilated. This separate existence construed through gunas, when the gunas are gone, they are also gone. It is the gunas create the boundary. Like if mentally I create a boundary and call it a Pacific Ocean, it is when I remove that mental block, then it is water. It is ocean, that's all. So I give the make a boundary and call it, and this is Pacific Ocean, then this is Atlantic, and this is I give names to them, and thus I get bound by that, those limitations. So when those limitations are removed, well, there is freedom. That is freedom. I am so and so. I am Swami Yogatmananda. I weigh so much. My height is so much. I am minister at Vedanta Society, and I give discourses till people get terribly bored and all that. It is then that is my limitation. That understanding. If I remove, just think of ourselves free of all these lines. Then we are everything. Then each of us is really same. these boundaries are really speaking just product of ignorance. It is not real. If you try to analyze, you will immediately see that they make no sense at all, even at the intellectual level. Absolutely no sense. Yet, although call ourselves very intellectual species, we are not. Because although our intellect tells it to us, we brush it aside. We don't pay heed to it. We cling to those fictitious limitations. Not only that, build our whole life basing on those silly, non-existent figment of imagination called distinctions. It is all not real. And still we indulge in that and call that a practical life. And if somebody is trying to break through that and get established in the truth, we laugh and say the fellow is impractical. What is practical, what is impractical? Leading a life on the basis of reality is practical. Basing the life on fantasy is impractical. So we should see that reality is that of this oneness, divine existence. Fantasy is that ego and so forth. This is so and so. Basing the life on that is the life of fantasy and therefore an impractical life. The practical life, intelligent life, the sensible life is the life that is based on truth, based on reality. So that is why when you get beyond the gunas, when the seer beholds no active agent other than gunas and knows that which is beyond the gunas, he attains my being. And that is how one attains to one's true nature. And what happens then when you know this? Result of becoming one with God is clearly told. You become one with God, then what happens? What next? A question may come to us we got one with God, some superman. Then what next? What is the outcome? What is the actual practical outcome of becoming one with God? One may ask, then will that remove my back pain? Will it get rid of my blood pressure? Will it make my family life better? Will it increase my bank balance? What will happen? Tell me that becoming one with God, I don't actually follow. What will how I will become benefited by that? Tell me the actual benefits. And so actual benefits are told here, that when you become one with God, then all that is God, you also have that being one with God. And what is it? Gunanetan atityatrin dehi deha samudbhavan janma mritya jara dukkhai vimukto mritam ashnute. Having transcended these three gunas, which are the cause of this body, the embodied self, bereft of birth, death, old age and misery, attains immortality. What a great benefit that one feels the problem with old age, the approaching death. One gentleman was expressing this to me yesterday or day before, that old age and the approaching death and all these problems that come with it, the disease, I am scared. So many diseases can come in life and I feel scared. What will happen to me? Well, you will go beyond that. You will go beyond that. In a movie, suppose you are acting as a person that is being surrounded by all the terrible robbers, and then they have stabbed everything from you and about to murder you. Well, you are not, you are performing the role. You know that you are actually not getting robbed really. You know, if you forget that you are acting there, if you forget that it is a stage show that is going on, and in fact you have chosen to play in that role, you are not getting actually robbed at all. In fact, you are getting some money for your wonderful role that you are playing. So then you don't feel scared, even if those robbers, they take out the gun and are about to shoot you. So this knowledge that and this knowledge therefore has to be formed in us, that nothing is going to happen to me. Friends, this is a reality, this is truth. Just ponder over it, that is this real, is this not just a show, is this not just a stage play? And so many things come in our life and go. Is it not like a stage play? Who am I apart from the all these apparel that we put on in the play according to the need of the play? It is a body necessary for that play, is an apparel. It has been put on, and then it is, we are not that. So think of this end of the play, when all this apparel will be gone, and then myself and all the robbers, we may go together to the restaurant to have a pizza. There won't be this fear at all. Will there be any fear then? There will be no fear. And this is truth, friends. And we live in this world. Swami Vivekananda in this book Jnana Yoga very graphically describes this situation, that we are terrified here. Every moment we are terrified, what will happen in the future, who will be, whom I will be able to live with, and what will happen in my life tomorrow, will my headache or this or that get worsened, well, how will my financial situation be tomorrow, worries, worries, worries all the time. But when you know this true nature, then not that externally the worries will go away, means those situations will be there, but you will know that it is a play, and you will internally laugh, even though externally you may be weeping in the play. If you have to act in the play in a very heart-rending scene, then you try to bring out all the tears. You bring out all the tears, in fact you put something in the eyes so that the tears will really keep on rolling like rivers. But even though they are rolling down, even though you are making very the face with the lot of practice, a contorted face, showing lot of those suffering on your person, still you know that you are not suffering at all. You are feeling happiness that, what a perfect role I am performing there. In fact, later on you feel happy when you get the prize for the best actor. So, because how nicely you had cried, But you were not crying. You were seeing that, well, the role is properly performed. So, friends, here also let us remember that we are not any of like this. And to know this, we have to cultivate this sattva guna. Now, obviously, after hearing all this, Arjuna, being a true aspirant, a practical aspirant, wants to know how the life of this person gets transformed. How can one see the signs of a person that has gone beyond these gunas and thus has been freed? How a person who has been freed from all the gunas acts in this world? How is that person different from we all? One gets the desire to know this so that one can follow the qualities and the ways that person acts, so that we also will be able to inculcate that knowledge. It is a way that human beings learn by emulating the right examples. You call them role models. You look at the role model, and thus in every field, even if you want to become a good sports person, you look at that person, that how that person does so many things, and then you try to mold your life, model your life on that, so that gradually you will also be able to get to that stage. So that is the way human beings learn, by looking at someone who has attained all these things. So to know that, Arjuna asked this question, and this question has been, similar question I mean, has been asked earlier in at the end of the second chapter, where Arjuna asked about the signs of a person who is established in wisdom, sthita prajna. And then at the end of the 12th chapter, although Arjuna is not asking any question, Lord tells the signs of a true devotee, how the life of a devotee gets transformed, so that you will know a perfect devotee. And now the similar signs are told in a different language, in a different psychological setup, as to make us aware the signs of a person who is freed from these three bondages. Arjuna's questions goes like this. Arjuna uvacha, kaidlingai strin guna netan atito bhavati prabho kimacharhat katham chaitan strin guna nati vartate. That by what characteristics, O Lord, is one who has transcended these three gunas known? What is his conduct, and how does this person transcend these three gunas? That this question is about the characteristics of one who has transcended the three gunas. Because you said transcendence of three gunas, but that is just a word. How am I to really know that? Tell some signs that are on my plane of understanding. How are we to know that? So those signs will be told. And then the distinction also from compared to our life, because then the gap is really the one is what makes us see things. Our perceptions of relativity, a perception of the difference, depends on the perception of the gap. Actually, we see gap, and thus we see different things. If we are unable to see the gap, we will not be able to identify things in the visual or audible, those senses. Therefore, it is called the resolution, power of resolution. That like you have the cameras of that resolving power, or such, you know, the objects, the lenses with resolving power, so that the object can be discerned separately. We cannot with our eyes discern two objects, maybe two lines. In our physics class we used to do that experiment, that two lines, they are apart, but then you go backwards, go back, till you do not see the two lines, the gap between the two lines will not be seen, and they will be seen as one. Exactly find out the distance. You measure first the gap between the two lines, and then calculate the distance at which, exactly that distance at which you see the two merge together. When you know that, then on the basis of that, the resolving power of your eye is calculated. If you add one more lens there, then that lens plus eye will be able to, you know, that you will be able to get the resolving power of the combination, and that the lens or eye. Sometimes one thinks that it is the resolving of power of lens, forgetting that you are seeing through the lens with your eye. So it is actually a combination of the resolving powers. So anyway, the idea is that we feel the gap. The more pinchingly we feel the gap, we see the difference better, and thus when we see the difference better, we will be able to see where we need to bring about the corrections. The whole thing in spiritual life is to bring about a change in our perception, our understanding, and our lifestyle. Our priorities need to get changed accordingly. So, therefore it is important to feel the life of, say, Sri Ramakrishna, and in relation to that, the life of us. Then see the contrast, feel the contrast, and try to make the proper changes, so that this gap between you and Sri Ramakrishna will start getting reduced. You will become gradually like that. In the dualist philosophy, therefore it is sometimes called, very beautiful words are there, sarupya mukti. That it is, sarupya means you start gradually looking like your ideal. You and your ideal, the gap between them starts reducing. One musician I know, singer, he practices with he listens to great singers, keeps their recording, and then tries to emulate that. A particular sequence of those notes, how that person has taken, and then sings himself like that, tries to sing like that, and then compares the two. Gradually tries to, you know, bring his voice exactly to the level of that person's voice, so that when there is no difference seen, then he understands that yes, I have now acquired that quality. So that is how the teaching goes on. So we have to become sages, as Swami Vivekananda says. It is kind of bold statement, but it is very important. He says that gone are all the past rishis and what they said and so forth. Now, each of us will have to become a rishi, a sage. Just glorifying those sages and doing nothing is not going to help us. Those sages are role models. They are great. So let us mold our lives, because each of us have the seed of greatness, and that seed has to be cultivated on the basis of this. And Arjuna, really sincerely wanting to do that, puts this question, that how are the signs of this person who has gone beyond three gunas and thus become free? So by looking at that, by seeing the signs of that, I will try to cultivate my life also on those lines, and then I will become free. I will become like that person, and so I will be same as that person. I will also become free. It is like that if something walks like a duck, swims like a duck, quacks like a duck, then it is, what is it? It is duck. So exactly, you know, so you just show all the signs of the realized person beyond all the three gunas, then you are that. Each of us will become that if we follow these in right earnest. Very beautifully described. They are, of course, very briefly told, but nothing is left out. It is a very succinct but comprehensive presentation, psychologically very penetrating, and practically easy to implement. It is what we call these days user-friendly things, you know. So user-friendly, these are the user-friendly signs, so you can use them actually. That is the presentation of Lord here about this. So, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Lord starts describing. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prakasham cha pravrittim cha mohameva cha pandava na dveshti sam pravrittani na nivrittani kamshati. The Blessed Lord said, he who does not hate when the light of knowledge, activity and delusion arise, O son of Pandu, nor desire them when they cease. There is no desire to acquire anything, no desire to, no intention of discarding anything. Swami Vivekananda says in his inspired talks, neither seek nor avoid. That is the sign. The person doesn't seek anything, doesn't avoid anything, because nothing is touching that person, is not concerned about that. So that is one beautiful expression, that this person also will have all these apparent things in the world coming. When one is living in this world, then all those situations, different situations like pleasures, they will come. That person will neither seek them nor will try to hold on to them. Then unpleasant things, they will also come. That person will not try to get rid of them or hold on to them, anything. They just pass. Good, healthy days will come. Let them come, go. The sickness will come. Let it come and go. So, it's like that. Then whatever is necessary in those situations, but is not attached to any of these. It is a big, very important difference, you know, in our life and in the life of such people. When we look at the lives of, say Ramakrishna or Buddha or Jesus or great saints, we will see the difference that clear this thing that how they handled these things. Not that there were no apparent financial problems in their life. There were some days of affluence, some days of not having enough. But they come, they go. They did not try to hold any of that. Were not attached to any of these things. They healthy days were there. The sick days were there. There were winters, there were summers. In the winters, like us, we also, they also like us, put on the warm clothing. In the summer, they also use fans to keep themselves, you know, that their bodies free from that torment. Whenever they had sickness, they also took medications. That it is, they did all like they apparently like common person. What changes, what difference is there is that they are not attached to any of these things. It is really a great eye-opener for us when we see the life of such person with this attitude. This attitude really is very important, that to see the life, to be in the living presence of such person, where you will see these things. Sri Ramakrishna used to say that it is difficult to see the divine in human form. You get the question, how this fellow who catches cough and cold and gets diarrhea, how can that person be divine? How can I imagine God having a diarrhea? So it is, apparently, it is, we do not think properly there, that this person is not attached to anything. Doesn't that knowledge or the control of mind doesn't get disturbed by any of these issues. So that is where one has to see this difference in knowledge and fill the gaps so that we can also shape our life on those lines and thus get liberated. Any questions? Yes, Charles, what's your question?
We're not supposed to seek or avoid anything, but on the other hand, we avoid the two lower gunas and seek the higher guna. So how does that work exactly?
That's a good question, that we are not supposed to seek anything or avoid anything. But this quality is to be sought, is it not? The quality of not seeking anything and not avoiding anything, that needs to be sought. Yes. Yes, what is?
This is regarding the verse that says a person attains the God status if he or she sees the three gunas as only active agents.
Yes.
Here it is referring to the way of Sankhya philosophy, is that right? Because they are seeing gunas as something distinct from being.
You can say like that. It is in many places the language of Vedanta and Sankhya is very, very similar and overlapping. No doubt about that. But the differences with Sankhya's these gunas and the Prakriti, they are a separate reality from the self. So there is no concept of the one which is beyond everything. The one alone that exists, and that concept is not there. And therefore you find with Sankhya that there are many, many beings, many souls, many Purushas, and Prakriti binds them differently. It's a beautiful analysis, no doubt, on the basis of this inherent experiential duality that we feel, if we take that duality to be the basis, then the analysis of Sankhya is great. But this duality itself starts pinching us because of the inherent feeling for oneness. The aspirations for oneness are so strong that therefore the two always create problems. As the Upanishad says, that as long as you see two, there is no getting rid of fear. And the two means one sees other, and so there is fear. But therefore when all the difference is removed, then only one becomes fearless. This is the language is like Sankhya, that's all, not really.
Because it's not clear from that perspective that actually what they meant is gunas are something like unreal, or we see that as something active in itself.
It is when you realize God, then they become unreal. There is a reason that it is not told right now that they are unreal, because you see it, the reality has different status. That it is true that suppose a person in a stage show commits a crime, then the police of that stage show come and arrest him, and he is put in the prison in the show. All that is real as far as the context of the play is concerned. So in this show, that where one feels the bondage, therefore at that level the gunas also are real.
Yeah.
Yes, Abhijit?
So why doesn't it talk about how to cultivate sattva and rajas?
The earlier it has been told that the qualities, that it is, you have to cultivate these qualities. Further it will come in the 16th chapter as Daivi Sampat. Earlier also in 6th chapter it has been told, this is told in this also earlier, that the cultivation of knowledge, cultivation of the peace and benevolence, that these things we know how to cultivate those, well, cultivate them. There is no, there is like how to walk, well, walk, it is something like that. It is, you can tell how only to a certain extent, is it not? You cannot tell how beyond a certain limit. That, okay, open the box and take the things out. But how to open the box? It is tied with the rope, you open, untie. How to untie? Use your fingers. Where are the fingers? It is all very difficult, you know. So, a certain understanding is, it always has to be taken for granted to say how, beyond which you cannot really describe. So, how to cultivate the sattva guna? You can say, practically speaking, attend the Bhagavad Gita classes regularly, try to understand that, and try to meditate, and so forth. That will help you to cultivate sattva. Now, if you ask, well, how to attend the classes, then it is, you know, very difficult to again explain things. Okay, yes, what is it, George, please?
It's actually off the subject. I'm actually coming to the conclusion that negativity and evil and problems in the world have to be there. In other words, if everything's good and everything, it wouldn't be much of a world.
Exactly, I perfectly agree with you. You can never make the world as a whole peaceful.
No.
It is not possible. Because what is right according to one perspective is not right according to other perspective. It is the search to go beyond relativity is age old, and yet this relativity in the world remains. So many people you may see try to, you know, take out the wars and all that, but it is never successful and is never going to be successful.
Right.
Yeah, that's so.
Dull world.
It will not be world at all.
No.
Yeah. It will mean really destruction of the world.
Right.
Yeah. And then again that means no peace. So
and you reach that conclusion when you get old.
And that is true. It is like getting rid of the I told that joke a few times. That a person of rather advanced age was complaining to the doctor that when he tries to, it is early morning, when he tries to get up, all joints are so achy. And then now that is a sign of the age, the joints, so the doctor told that the day when you wake up in the morning and feel no pain in your joints, you can safely conclude that you are dead. So when you are alive, then these things are going to happen.
Well, you gotta have black. I mean, I always say you have to have black to have white.
Exactly, you are right. Huh?
Yeah.
So let us conclude with the closing prayers. And then, as you know, there will be just one more Bhagavad Gita class coming Friday. By the grace of God, we will try to finish this 14th chapter. Only a few verses are left. And then we will begin in September. And also, next Saturday, there is a spiritual retreat coming up, and that will be in fact the last program before we close for the summer. There will be a few summer programs, but mainly in our regular sessions will stop on June 23rd. So June 23rd is the retreat date. If you would like to attend the retreat, please sign up for it.
गीता सुगीता कर्तव्या किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानियानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।